Hello, and welcome to the 54th episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. I am Samantha Blackman, an associate professor here at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, Indiana. And I'm not feeling very wonderful about either one very right now.
Because we're in the middle of an insane storm.
That, and we're also in the middle of a series of seeming hate crimes on campus.
Hate crimes.
Well, yes, I was, you know.
Which
I
people didn't are sensitive about because the police said, well, we're not gonna follow these up because they don't seem like intentional hate crimes. As if
hate as in crimes using can be using, you know, racial slurs and other derogatory shit, writing it all over the Black Cultural Center.
I'm just saying,
and
when I write
and the anti-racist
stuff,
posters.
I don't mean to. So no big deal.
Well, you know, it's that whole accidental racist shit.
Oh, like Brad Paisley?
Yes, and for the record, I want to say that LL Cool J needs the shit smacked out of him.
I was wondering what you thought about that. Because it's pretty ridiculous. Furthermore, Brad Paisley isn't spray painting white supremacy on the Black Cultural Center.
Or write nigger all over the anti-racist posters.
Right, exactly. Like, when people go march against it, then they write that shit all over. So
yeah. And draw pictures of people hanging from trees. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, it's just a reasonable expression of white power. I'm just saying. It's seriously, like, I can't believe that shit happens.
Well, like, you know what? I'll tell you exactly what it's going to take. It's going to take them catching one person that does it and prosecuting them to the fullest extent of federal law for people to stop all that shit on campus. Mm-hmm. See, because somebody's doing that shit because they think it's funny.
They're probably, like, not racist, I
doubt that. I think they are racist, but I think that they're doing that shit because they think it's funny. Because I really can't see anybody doing that shit if they're not racist.
That's true. I guess they're not the type of racist to their anger to spray paint on walls. They're, like, sort of inherently based on their cultural racist.
Right.
And doing it because they think it's funny.
Right. But if
they do it ironically, like lots of racists, you know.
They prosecute the shit out of somebody, they gonna stop.
Like with Napster, man. They put someone in jail for like a billion years for downloading shit from Napster, and I stopped.
Shit. I didn't stop.
I don't want to go to prison for a million years.
I stopped using Napster.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't stop downloading music, but I stopped using Napster.
Oh, that's
funny. I don't want to hear this. La, la, la. All right. That's what's going on this week for us. Anyway,
welcome to
Tuesday. All this shit going on, and it's only Tuesday.
Okay.
Anyway, that's been said and done. So, ladies, and I'm joined tonight. As I said, I'm Smith Blackman, and I'm joined tonight by my co-hosts, as I am every podcast night, Alex Lane and Nicole Marie. Ladies,
yeah,
yay. I was going to say, my Tuesday shitstorm is just a little bit different than your guys's.
Yeah.
Music felons.
Yeah. Rocking the whole strep throat in the middle of what is trying to be spring right now is a bunch of crap. But
not only that, but Nicole's being the biggest trooper in the world, podcasting with us tonight so that we don't have to do it on Thursday, which is my poker night. Or on this weekend, which I guess Sam wants to spend with her quote-unquote family, whatever. I guess you have a kid that you care about.
Well, Friday I'm actually going out with my friends. So.
Okay, so get back. I guess you want to have a quote-unquote life.
It's not allowed.
So we're getting it tonight.
Getting it done.
But you're being a trooper, I think. Kudos.
Thanks. And we're really excited about tonight.
Yes.
Yeah, well, tonight I'm not as excited about as 4 nights ago when we recorded our episode.
Well, our interview anyway. Well, we're excited about bringing you tonight's content. How's that?
That's why we're doing it this week instead of next week, which is what we normally would do with the every other week thing. But the interview that we have coming to you guys is so incredible. We could not wait.
Couldn't wait. Has to be done.
Absolutely. I'm Alex.
I missed one.
Did I introduce myself? I'm Alex. I'm a PhD candidate at Purdue University. I wrote 700 words and revised a chapter today. So, there we go.
Yay!
I also spent, like, 45 minutes training my dogs, because they don't respect me, because I'm the bottom of the food chain, or whatever.
Gotcha.
Dogs. Yeah. So, I'm trying to counteract that.
That's good.
Yeah, that happens at my house a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't happen to me.
Well, I imagine not. I imagine not.
Oh, that's funny.
Even though my dog is just crazy. He's nuts.
Well, he's still a baby.
He is still a baby.
I was going to say, which one of our dogs isn't crazy, though? I feel like the three
of us have
the craziest dogs combined.
Smalls is actually not that crazy. She's over 2 years old now. She's like an old lady, so...
Yeah, see, and Franklin's only 6 months old, but he's a
nut. Do you call him Franklin?
Yeah.
I thought you called him Frankie.
Well, we call him Franklin or Frankie or Frankie Knuckles or, yeah.
And I got like, Biggleston, Mr. Biggleworth the Fourth, Biggie, Small.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we have all sorts of names. So I guess Smizzle, Smizzle Sticks.
Smizzle Sticks.
Yeah, whatever comes out is what he pretty much gets. I mean, some days what he gets called is not very nice.
Fair enough.
But you know, he's 6 months old now, and he's getting better. Like now, you know, he knows he still does his dirt, but is very intentional when he does his dirt. And he's getting a little better. He's getting a little better trained. And you know, that's partially my fault, because we got him so early. He was over 8 weeks old, but yeah.
Same with Senior Biggleston. He was 8 weeks, and we have a lot of pee on our hardwood floors that we have to laminate out.
Yep.
Yeah. I got Zelda when she was 6 weeks.
They shouldn't be selling them at 6 weeks. That's really surprising.
I agree, but I had no choice. She was the last one in the litter to be picked up, and I had to pick her up. I couldn't leave her.
Did you pick her up? Did you get her in Indiana?
Yeah.
They will sell them in 6 weeks in Indiana.
In Indiana, they will, yep.
They'll sell them in 6 weeks in Indiana. I found that out because they tried to get me to take Franklin in 6 weeks, and I was like, there's no way in hell I'm taking home a six-week-old puppy.
I hope that one day I'll have as much money as Bill Gates, and I'm going to spend every single dollar prosecuting puppy mill people and putting them to death.
Well, it's not just puppy mills, it's breeders and everybody. They will sell them in 6 weeks. Legally, they can in the state of Indiana.
I'm just saying it's indicative of a larger issue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tonight is stand on your soapbox night, I think.
Apparently.
I don't care. I'm standing up for it.
We're going to prosecute.
I've had three glasses of wine, so whatever.
Whatever.
Speaking of wine, what are you guys drinking?
Skipping down the line.
I know.
Well, since clearly Alex Lane is drinking wine, I'm drinking Diet Pepsi.
Boo.
I know.
I have water, and I have a Vicodin waiting for me after we're done with this. So my party starts after the podcast.
I totally don't believe that you haven't taken it yet.
I did. Well, I've had, like, how many am I? I'm supposed to take 4 a day right now, which I think is a lot.
The most Vicodin I've ever taken is half a pill, because I'm such an anxious freak, as Sam will attest to. Like, I can't be on a plane. I can't be with buildings that are higher than 5 stories. Like, I'm a total freak. Can't be in big cities. I also can't take anxiety meds like a Vicodin or like a what's the one that they usually give for anxiety?
Xanax,
because I freak out so much that I'll like die from the medicine that I can't take it. So the most I've ever taken from a Vicodin was after I had surgery. I took a half a Vicodin and I gave the bottle away. I flushed it on the toilet. I gave it away because I was like, I can't. I'm panicking.
I don't like to take narcotics. I mean, I will, but I don't like to. But you know what I refuse to take? Because I got TMJ, apparently.
Not apparently. It's terrible. You have migraines constantly.
Yeah, I know.
That's horrible.
And one of the things the doctor gave me is he gave me pain meds, which were narcotic, because I can't take anti-inflammatories. But he also gave me muscle relaxers.
Why can't you take anti-inflammatories?
Well, because anti-inflammatories wreak havoc on your, is it liver or kidneys? One
liver,
of the two.
Yeah.
Well, for some people it does. And I'm one of those people. So I can't take them. And And but he gave me muscle relaxers, and I refused to take muscle relaxers because, you know, the muscle relaxers in theory even freak me out because it's supposed to relax muscles, right? But I'm like, isn't the heart a muscle? I'm just saying, does it
and
like
the brain, right?
Does it no, the brain is not a muscle. That's like tissue.
Doesn't it slow your heart rate, don't they?
I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it does because it relaxes it. Right? So I'm like, so really, what sense does that make? Because I mean, that muscle relaxer doesn't know, oh, affect these muscles, but not these. No, it's going for everything. So I'm not taking that shit. He gave it to me. He was like, I was like, I'm not taking that. He was like, you may need it. I was like, I will never be in enough pain to need that.
Fair enough. Yeah. Also, like, I have such a low heart rate already that I think I would die if my heart rate lowered anymore. So now I'm nervous about that.
I just found out I have a super low blood pressure.
Yeah, me too.
So I imagine that would.
Mine's incredibly low. In fact, to keep from getting nauseous, like every 9 hours or so, I have to eat something super salty, which I realize Sam totally disagrees with in theory, but I get super sick.
I was told to eat 6 almonds before I go to bed.
I haven't heard the 6 almonds. That's interesting.
Yeah, 6 almonds before I go to bed so that I get a good night's sleep, because otherwise I'll wake up because of my low blood pressure and blood sugar and all sorts of fun things.
Damn. Well, the fact that you weigh like 5 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, she weighs like...
You need the protein to keep you from getting...
That's probably why they told you that. It had nothing to do with your blood pressure.
I've been doing the protein shakes in the morning. And let me just tell you, protein is disgusting. It's disgusting. There's nothing about that makes that taste good. But if you put enough peaches in a
What about,
smoothie,
like, why don't you just eat a bag of beef jerky? I eat beef jerky, like, every other day. And it's delicious.
Oh my god, that's disgusting.
No, that is not disgusting for people who have low blood pressure and low sodium and low heart rate.
And that's the funny thing, is that my heart rate is fine. It is surprisingly low for someone who, since I don't haven't like really worked out in the way that I used to in like 2 years since I screwed up my knee. So it's surprisingly, my heart rate is surprisingly good. Even though this summer I'm seriously doing water walking every day.
With me.
With you. Yeah. My blood pressure runs high, not because of anything that I've necessarily done, but because blood pressure on my father's side of the family has always been astronomically high.
Well, that's one of the things. It's like 15% nature and whatever, 85% nurture. Like, you can do things to decrease it for sure. But a lot of it, like the preconditions, there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, you got that backwards. So it's like 85% nature and 15% nurture. Yeah, I mean, because, you know...
That's exactly what I mean.
You know, I don't eat the crappy stuff that would, like, normally give people astronomically high blood pressure.
That's what I'm saying. A minimal amount is from your day-to-day routine, and a lot of it's from your past and your genes. That's what I mean.
Yeah, so...
What are we talking about?
I know, what the hell? All right, let's talk about what we're supposed to be fucking talking about.
We did what you're drinking.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
I haven't played a single thing, if we're going to do what you plan. Since the last time we recorded, four days ago, Tomb Raider. I played a ton of stuff, but I've been, it's the end of the semester, I'm dissertating, nothing. So someone else.
Well, playing Bioshock Infinite. I've played a bit of Bioshock Infinite. I haven't, and it's not that I'm not loving the game. But I haven't really been able to get into it just because I haven't had the kind of time to sit down and like commit to several hours at a time of playing Bioshock Infinite. Because a lot of my time's been spent playing Ni No Kuni.
Mm-hmm.
And we are officially at the final boss battle.
Yay.
And P wanted to start it tonight, but, you know, it was already past her bedtime. And I'm like, no, because it's the final battle. And I want you to see the entire thing and not fall asleep on it.
Yeah, definitely.
So, because if it gets too hard, she'll just hand me the controller and I'll have to finish it, which is ultimately going to happen because it's the final boss battle. And once she gets killed, once she's going to be like, Mama, you beat her.
You know, one of the hardest boss battles I've ever had to face was Skylanders, the first one, Spyro's Adventure. That boss was impossible. It was, like, absolutely ridiculous.
Nice.
It was 25 minutes on YouTube video, and it took me about 30. It was crazy.
Really? Yeah, that's crazy.
No, you know what? Some of these Ni No Kuni boss battles have been pretty long too. Some of the boss battles have been pretty long, which makes me pretty sure that this one's probably gonna take me at least a half an hour, being fully leveled up and everything. So we'll see what happens. But I want her to see the whole thing and not sleep through the end of the game, because that means I would have to do it again the next day.
Yeah, for sure.
And after, you know, at this point, well, we're probably about 65 hours, maybe close to 70 hours in. I don't want her to miss the end. So, so Ni No Kuni, a little bit of BioShock Infinite. And oddly enough, I've been playing Full House Poker on Xbox Live Arcade.
That makes sense.
Because, it's, you know, I can sit and play a couple of hands and, yeah. I'm not very good at poker. I wish Alex Lane would get Full House Poker so I could play with her.
Listen, I'm a live poker player, so you and I can put any amount of money down, and I'll play live with you, but...
I don't gamble. I don't like to lose my money. I am cheap.
Considering your online poker playing, I'd say you do like to gamble. You just haven't met the right circumstances.
Yeah, where does it involve me losing my money?
What, you gonna complain about losing $5? Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Do you know I can do with $5? I could buy coffee and a scone.
Huh. That is not true.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are you going? Because a scone at Starbucks is like $6. It's ridiculous. Oh, that's funny.
I like the scones at Great Harvest. They're only like $3.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Oh, Great Harvest has scones? That would be
amazing. Oh my God, they have awesome scones.
I need to go
come
to
back
there.
To Lafayette just for that.
Indeed.
Just for the scones.
Well, there's Great Harvest everywhere, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, they don't have them around here anymore.
Oh, no. That's too bad. They're in my hometown.
Yeah, you got to get the peach ones. The peach ones are really good.
That's disgusting. Yeah, so what are you guys reading?
My playing.
Oh, God. What are you playing? My bad.
No, it's really short. Anyways, I finished BioShock Infinite. So Sam, when you say you haven't had a lot of hours to dedicate to it, as soon as you do, it's over.
Don't say that.
It's true though. How many hours I finally is it? It took one of my friends 7 hours to get through it.
No. Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Not joking. Like at first, I thought, okay, like I'm really into this, and like, wow, I feel like it's going a long time, and then all of a sudden the game was over, and I was like, seriously? Like the story just starts to pick up, and then the game's over.
The racist storyline. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, no spoilers.
And then the racism ends.
No spoilers. But
I haven't played through the whole thing yet, so
I was not disappointed with it at all. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a lot for us to all talk about as soon as you guys are finished with
it. Yeah, I've heard that can't really appreciate it unless you. There's a lot. I mean, you can appreciate it, but there's a lot of inside references to the first BioShock and stuff, so.
Yes, there's a ton of small things that are going on that you didn't pick up on. Well, I picked up on a couple of things, but I didn't realize how they kind of pieced the puzzle together until the very end. And then your mind's just being blown, like, second after second, and then it's over. And, I mean, like I said, we'll have a lot to talk about. It'll be interesting to see what you guys think of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I played that, and I've been putting a lot more time into my Clash of Clans on my iPad.
Oh, sure.
Which is still a lot of fun. I'm trying to build my clan castle so I can be a part of a clan, but I keep getting raided, and when they're stealing your gold all the time, you can't really build things that cost a lot of gold. And then more Super Mario Brothers 2 new, which I was playing last time.
Yay.
So that's what I'm playing.
Well, let me just add one thing to what I'm playing, because I'm still playing the Tribes, but I'm about to quit.
Yeah, I'm playing the Tribes too.
You know what?
Oh, you're gonna quit?
I bought gems, and it's a customer service issue. Why I'm gonna quit? I bought gems when the gems were on sale this weekend, and then it was like, you know, well, they wanted you to expand and go to another island. So I went to an island, and
are you talking about the ice island?
No, the marble island.
Which is like snow and ice and stuff?
Yep.
Yeah.
Marble Fjord.
Yep.
Well, okay, yeah, I guess so. It is icy, but that was the name of it. Yeah. And the game glitched and all my gems disappeared. I had 100 and something gems.
That's crazy.
And they all disappeared.
I bought gems, not saying I bought gems several times, but if I had, I would say that they hadn't disappeared. That's weird.
Well, it disappeared when I expanded and went to another island. My gems disappeared, and customer service has done nothing to replace them. I've been going back and forth with them, crap. So I'm going to say fuck them in their game. And
that's fair enough.
Yeah, and not play anymore because they're not getting any more of my money.
Well, yeah, I'll keep you up to date if anything more interesting or racist happens. It doesn't get much more racist than the Tribes for sure, but I'll let you know. It's really awful. I'll do a post. I'm doing a post on it soon.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
that happened. What you reading, folks?
Nothing. I mean, a million things.
I was going to say, you are so reading stuff. I know you are.
I'm reading so much stuff. It actually hurts my brain a little bit to think about it. But right now, I'm turning my chapter 2 into Sam on Friday, so I'm reading sort of some general game study stuff and a really heavily feminist methodology stuff and some workplace studies and PW stuff, so nothing that's of any interest at all. It's a podcast.
That sounds good.
Of course it's interesting.
It's not. You'll read it. You'll be bored.
Yeah, I probably will. No, I'm joking. I'm reading dissertation chapters.
Ugh.
For various and essential people.
That sounds, painful.
And, no, it's not. So, yeah, I'm reading a lot of dissertation chapters, and I'm getting ready to read seminar papers for folks in my GenTech seminar.
I would say ugh, but some of their projects sound really interesting. So.
Yeah, there's lots of game projects, too, so.
Yeah, exactly.
It's GenTech is gender and technology, so, and what else? I'm still reading, and because I didn't finish, even though it's really short, Jesper Juul's book on failure. I think we talked about that last time.
Interesting.
Games and failure, of course, not just failure in general.
Right. I imagine.
Just being a failure.
Just being a failure, yeah. I'm reading just about being a failure. That's about it. That's all I'm reading.
Nicole, you reading anything?
Aside from the usual keeping up with blogs, I decided to reread The Great Gatsby before the movie comes out.
Oh, sure.
That is one of my favorite all-time books.
Yep. So I wanted to refresh my mind before I go see this movie.
I've never read it.
Have you never read? I love that book.
Yeah, you need to read
it. I've read a lot of books from that time period, but I didn't read that one particularly.
The Great Gatsby is an awesome book.
I have to.
It is awesome.
Let me just say that, and I'm afraid of what Leonardo DiCaprio is going to do to that role.
Do you think it's not going to be good? Are you like, I think that the way that they're filming it looks phenomenal, but yeah, I'm skeptical.
I think that cinematically it's going to be a beautiful movie.
Beautiful.
You don't
like
the Leo?
But I don't think Leonardo DiCaprio can be Gatsby. Did you see the original Gatsby movie?
No. So I don't know anything about Gatsby.
With Paul Newman?
He's a good actor.
Or not Paul Newman. Who was it? Robert Redford or Paul Newman?
I think it was Robert Redford.
Robert Redford, yeah. I'm trying to think. I'm like, blonde, really square jaw. Robert Redford was a really good Gatsby.
Alex Lane, how have you not read or watched that movie? Because that was like 10th grade high school, you know, literature class kind
of
stuff.
I mean, we read a lot of different stuff. We just didn't happen to read that one, you know.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 1974.
We read a lot of the banned books list. The teachers that I had in 10th, 11th, and 12th grade only pick books off the banned books list.
I had teachers like that, too.
Yeah, so, yeah.
See, I mean, Robert Redford, like I said, he did Gatsby, that was like 1974. Here we go, Internet Movie Database. He was not the greatest Gatsby, but he was closer to what I envisioned Gatsby being than Leonardo DiCaprio. One, because Gatsby is kind of a man of the world. And Leonardo DiCaprio is still a kid in my mind, even though he's older. You know what I mean? He's still
he has a
kid young in face.
I don't think, you know, it's hard for child actors to grow up in my mind.
Sure, that's fair enough.
So, I'm not looking forward to it, but I'll probably see it because Gatsby is one of my favorite movies. I mean, one of my favorite novels. So, anyway.
Anywho. News?
News is usually the realm of Nicole, and she's like on Viking.
I don't have news, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, I don't have anything.
I also don't have an indie game, so.
So we suck this week.
It's not that. It's that we just recorded. But we were so, you guys, like the listeners have to be, they have to be forgiving because we just recorded and we could have waited 2 weeks, but we didn't because we wanted to get this interview out to you so badly because it's that good and you will not be disappointed by the fact that you don't get to hear me blur on about some indie game. Like, you will appreciate the interview that much more. So,
do you study rhetoric by any chance?
Oh, no, I don't. I study truth. I don't know what you study, but I'm just saying, like, it's going to be that much better because we don't have to bullshit through making some stuff up right at this second.
Well, not even just making something up. I did kind of just say, but first of all, we caught the bomber, so yay there. I think something a lot of people have been talking about recently is the new Zelda 3DS that's going to come out.
Yeah.
So people are super psyched about that and all of the announcements that kind of came along with Nintendo's extremely awkward little commercial or whatever that was.
Yeah, and then
did you watch that with him standing next to Luigi? It was so weird. It was so weird.
The spring update, did that come today or is that coming tomorrow? Because I have to admit, I haven't turned my Wii U on in a long time.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah, I don't
think... It is quickly going the way of the Wii in my household.
Yeah, nobody's talked about it, so I don't think... I think it's tomorrow. You'd think you would have seen stuff about it if it had been today.
I saw that there's... Yeah, it must be tomorrow because today they listed... The 8 launch titles that are going to be in the eShop. So that must be that just tells me that that's going to be tomorrow. Because you know why would they list launch titles if it came out today? And here we go. I can actually tell you what those titles are. So the launch titles are Trine 2, Mighty Switch Force HD. Tokitori 2, Chasing Aurora, Little Inferno, Cloudberry Kingdom, and Nano Assault Neo are the 8 eShop launch games that are coming tomorrow. Plus, there are going to be 23 retail games that you can download. And, you know, I never download any retail games from Nintendo because they don't give you any break whatsoever on the price. And usually you can buy them in the store cheaper because the stores are not running them at, you know, manufacturer suggested retail.
And the thing I don't like either is that they don't do a cross-platform across their various devices either. So that really pisses me off.
Yeah, and
like,
in
I'm
the
not
past,
gonna pay full
if
price.
You bought it. Well, yeah, and right. In the past, if you bought it, then you just duck out of luck when you switch devices.
Right, exactly.
Right, because, you know, that's why keep a lot of my my DSs, because on some of them, I have like 20 games that I bought, and if I get rid of the DS, then I just lose those 20 games because I can't move them to the next one.
And that's just not a sustainable model for very long. They're going to have to deal with that. I mean, even iTunes went to a model where you could download stuff you'd previously bought on old computers because you have to. You can't.
Right.
Because if you buy it, it's your property. Someone can't take it away from you.
But there's a limit to how many computers you can
allow
to download.
I think 5. But you can revoke privileges from one to get it to the next one. So.
Definitely, definitely.
Oh, you know what? I'm an idiot. That was the wrong list.
Oh. What list was that?
That was the old list.
Oh. Oh,
here we go. You know what they have? Oh, I might have to actually turn mine on. Downloading classic games on the Wii U for 30 cents.
Oh.
30 years of Famicom, 30-day limited offer, 30 cents per game.
That sounds pretty good, actually. 30 cents per game?
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, they've got, let's see. Coming to Nintendo eShop first. They got... So, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Score.
Stuff like Donkey Kong and Super Metroid and Kirby's Adventure.
Yeah, no one's saying they don't have good games. That's for sure.
No, the old eShop was the old eShop, the first eShop games. Sorry, folks. I don't know what the hell I was looking at.
Oh, well.
I'm an idiot.
Life goes on.
Yeah, I know.
No, it doesn't. That's the end.
It's over.
There's no going back.
She knows nothing of games. All right. So now I feel like we're rambling because we're all tired.
I know.
Exactly. Yeah, this is...
So our issue of the week is an interview, yes?
Interview, yes, definitely. We were lucky enough to get an interview with Mike Hoy.
2006 Time Magazine Person of the Year.
Co-recipient.
Let's go ahead and Google that.
Figure that one out, yeah. Google 2006 Person of the Year and you will learn all about it.
Mm-hmm. And how clever our interviewee is.
I will say, we've had a number of amazing interviews that just blew my mind on here, and this one does not disappoint. I can't go as far as to say it's the best one, because we've had people like Krista Charger and Megan Marie, and, I mean, Sherry Brenner-Ray, I mean, please, Mark Barlet. We've had amazing people on here, so.
Yeah, we've been really lucky.
We've been very fortunate, but I will say that for those of you who are interested in the way that particular discrimination issues and representation issues affects games, there's not a better interview to listen to than this. I mean, this guy's brilliant, and he's on it, you know.
So we're going to bring you our interview with Mr. Mike Hoy, who, as you all may know, is kind of famous, internet famous at least, for hacking The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker for his daughter, so that she could actually play
as a girl rather than a boy.
So it's kind of interesting because, as Alex said, this guy is brilliant, and he was a lot of fun to talk to. And we talked not only about his hacking of Zelda, but also about kind of issues of gender in games in general.
Indeed. So enjoy. Should we introduce ourselves maybe a little?
Please, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
Well, I'm Alex. I work with Sam. Well, technically, she's kind of my boss. But mm-hmm. I'm a PhD student at Purdue in rhetoric under her.
Awesome.
So
nice.
I'm Alex. I say that. I'm Alex.
Yes, you did.
Okay. Yeah.
I never know how to introduce myself, even on the podcast. I'm Nicole, and I did, undergraduate research with Sam, so that's kind of how I got on the podcast, and now this is all I'm involved with as far as that goes.
Nice. Podcast. I have the same problem. Hi, I'm Mike Hoy. I kind of do stuff.
Yeah. I call myself the gamer extraordinaire sometimes. Yeah. That seems nice. Fitting.
There you go. Excellent. That is fitting. And yeah. And I'm Samantha, and I'm I teach at Purdue. We do game stuff. So, digital humanities, digital media, new media studies is kind of predominantly what I teach these days. And then I end up with great students, graduate and undergraduate, like Alex and Nicole.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I love the fact that those courses even exist at all, much less that there are people teaching them. That's fantastic. I remember growing up and I'm thinking, this stuff is really important. Someone should have something to say about this. And of course, those courses didn't exist at all when I was going through university, but I'm glad that there's a place for them now.
Great. Yeah, it's a good thing. You know, there, of course, when I was going through university, there was nothing like that for me either. And even when I started teaching it, there was nothing like that. It's kind of like, how do we do this?
How do we manage this? All this stuff was like science fiction 15 yeah. years ago, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what would you guys like to talk about today?
Well, we want to talk about one, you, and two, kind of the really fascinating mods that you've done of some of the classic games for your daughter, for a number of reasons, and we'll kind of figure out, you know, what kind of was the impetus for that, and what your future plans are for those kinds of things as well. And us kind of going around the internet and finding out things about you, you know, mostly from your website.
Like your Time Magazine Award.
That's you were Time Magazine's 2006 yes. co-recipient of the year. We found that amusing.
I thought that was good. I put that on my resume, and it gets me a lot of blank stares until people realize that, in fact, everybody was Time Magazine. Yeah.
No, that's clever. I'm going to add that to my resume just to get people's attention.
You should, right? I think it's important that we all be proud of our achievement there.
The Time Magazine was so gracious to bestow upon us all.
Yes. It's true. And we worked so hard for it.
I felt it. 2006 was a rough year for me.
Yeah, it was good. I felt like I triumphed over adversity or something. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, Mike, let's talk a little bit about your background. You were a computer science major and a literature minor in college?
I've been a lot of different things, actually, in university. I haven't, in fact, actually finished. I've got about two-thirds of five different degrees now, and I've taken what I've needed from them, either in the poli-science, computer science, math, literature fields, and I've sort of been moving from place to place as I felt I needed to grow my own skills and grow my own understanding of how the world worked. Mm-hmm. And that's served me pretty well. In terms of a career, I've been a systems administrator for a long time, and that has sort of been at the seam of the seam of technology, or practical technology at least, mm-hmm. and people management as well. And I've grown that recently into a role at the Mozilla Corporation, where I do community management and community engagement for them, trying to get people involved in becoming contributors to their core products and the engineering team there. And that's been a really rewarding experience for me as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that, I guess, there you go. That's about 20 years summed up in about 45 seconds.
But that was the original purpose of a liberal arts education, right? To go into kind of a number of different programs and departments and choose the things that served you best.
I think so. And I've it is kind of sad that computing as a field has not become a liberal arts major. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, it really needs to be, because the stuff we do touches on the way people live their lives. As much, maybe more, maybe less, depend on who's making the argument. But as much, or possibly as much as computer science, or as I should say, political science or literature does. Mm-hmm. So it's one more tool in the toolbox, really. But it's something that I think that is needs to be approached from a humanities perspective in order to really understand why it's important.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as folks that are working kind of in the digital side of the humanities, I think that I think you can definitely say that we would agree with you on that one.
Very much so.
I'm glad to hear that. The people who the difficulty with that argument is that the people who agree with you already agree with you,
right.
And the people who don't agree with you, it's very hard to get them to ever agree with you. So, you know, that's the challenge that position presents.
Yeah, absolutely. So. You've worked, like you said, you've worked kind of in a number of different areas doing different things. Have you ever officially worked in games?
I never have. And to be fair, I've never really aspired to that. I've mm-hmm. been able, you know, my skill set has never really taken me in that direction. I don't have a clear idea of what makes a good game. I'm better at figuring out what problems in a complex system exist and how to fix them, and not really about understanding what makes a game playable or what makes a game fun. It's one of those things that I know it when I see it, but it turns out that's not good enough to be an actual creator of those things.
And are you a lifelong gamer?
In that sense, I really am. I was very fortunate when I was very young to be in a family that could afford to have an early, like an Apple IIc.
Yeah.
Back when that was a thing that, you know, existed in the wild.
Yeah.
And so I was a very early participant in the early text adventures from Infocom, for example, the old Hitchhiker's Guide is a text adventure and so on, and early video games there. And I've really grown up with that as a medium, to the exclusion, I would say, of other ones. I never really cared all that much about TV. Mm-hmm. Books are great. I had a lot of science fiction, a lot of books, and a library card growing up was a really important thing. But television, you just kind of watch television.
Right.
You don't actually do anything with it. And I get the sense occasionally that my daughter is frustrated with that as well when we're, you know, we have small episodes of things that we've downloaded that we watch as well. Mm-hmm. And she occasionally gets frustrated that she can't make any decisions about what's about to happen.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating to me because, you know, that's the environment we grew up with. You just consumed that and that was all that there was. And we all sort of knew that.
And how old is your daughter now?
She's right on the verge of turning 4.
Oh, okay. So, you know, so I can understand exactly what you say, Mike, because my daughter is 4, and like the new Sesame Street Connect TV and the Nat Geo TV stuff, where you actually get to interact with stuff, is kind of her. It makes sense to her more than I know. It's like people think it's strange because they like, oh, so you know, it's like this, and I'm like, well, she's never seen that because she doesn't watch television. She won't watch television for more than 5 minutes at a time because she gets bored with it and she goes to do something. But anything that she can interact with, she can actually engage with. So yeah, I think, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, this is a sign of what's coming for the new generation and not just kind of sitting in front of the TV vegging out.
Oh, and you would not believe how sideways my daughter goes when a commercial comes on TV. Like, Dad, put it back.
Yep.
What is this?
The TV is broken. Why can't we just go back to watching what I want to watch? And I have to explain, haha, that's a commercial. People have to watch those in the middle of TV. And then I think about that for a second. I think, why is that true at all?
Like, yeah.
Why am I putting up with that if my 3-year-old won't put up with that? So it's actually magnificent because there's so many things that we take as a given in that environment that the moment your kid goes and says, Dad, this is nonsense. Why are we doing this? You think for a second and say, well, that's just the way it is. No, wait, you're right. This is nonsense. Why are we doing it like this?
There's got to be a better way.
Exactly. I don't want to put it like that because that's infomercial talk right there. There must be a better way. But,
for 1995.
Exactly.
3 installments.
But on the other, hand, it's very true. Like we've given up pretty much having cable TV, for example, because all the things we want to have are on the internet now. And instead of watching 30 minutes of TV with 12 minutes of advertising in it, we can now just watch, you know, 20 minutes of television and we're done.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it saves a lot of time in terms of screen time. And yeah, so no, I understand exactly what you're talking about, because I mean, most of the things that we watch, if we, you know, we do watch is either like on demand or we download them, you know, because I'm not a television watcher either. And I think that was perhaps because, like you, books and games took up a lot of my time when I was growing up. And even when I was in college, when I was in college and even when I did my master's degree, I could probably count the number of times in a month, if not 2 months, that I turned my TV on on one hand. TV's never been, you know, the big thing for me.
And even even the on-demand stuff is a lot more engaging now, in the sense that it is not just there. Like you can't just sit down on a couch and turn on the TV and whatever's there happens to be there, and you just sit there. Like every viewing decision you make is something you have to choose. And I think that just that on its own is valuable. Like, you have to make a choice about what is going to hit you in the eyes. And when you're done with that decision, it doesn't just roll over into the next show or into the next ad block or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to then get up and pick something else. And I think that the act of being made to make choices in all media consumption is inherently valuable on its own. And the fact that kids are forced to do that as part of internet viewing in a way that they're not forced to do with TV is something that is going to be a net benefit.
Great. So let's, we have another kind of series of questions about the games that you modded for your daughter. Mm-hmm. And since I've been talking a lot, I'm going to let Alex and Nicole ask the first couple of questions.
Sure.
Ooh, all right. Okay. So how many games have you modded?
So far, I'm partway through a second one. The first one that I did and the one that got me a ton of press, which was a little bit surprising, was the Wind Waker game. So I've done one. I have designs on doing some more, and I've really been pleased to see that since I did that one, a couple of other people have sort of picked up that torch and run with it.
That's really cool. So what inspired your decision to do that?
You know, the actual reason is that she's starting to learn how to read, and a lot of the dialogue in the Nintendo games, none of it is voiceover because they're all older games. And so the dialogue on the screen is the stuff you have to follow. And in order for her to follow along with the game that we're playing together. And I'm sure you're familiar with Wind Waker. I mean, I say that casually because you've all mentioned that video games here. But it really does look like a sort of a live-action Saturday morning cartoon. Beautiful to play. But all the dialogue in it is portrayed as text on the screen. And I decided early on that I wanted my daughter to be able to put herself in that hero's role. But you know, if I wanted to do that convincingly, and still, you know, refer to her as a her, that I would need to sort of do some translation on the fly there to say, oh, now we're referring to Link as a she. And that got kind of awkward and clunky and really obnoxious, for me to be doing on the fly. And also, I felt like I was kind of lying to her about the text that was on the screen at a time when she's already trying to learn how to read.
Sure.
And I would be shortchanging her by saying that the screen said one thing when it didn't say that at all. So I realized that since it's in my power to be able to change that, I might as well be the person who goes in and makes that change.
That's really cool. When you play the game with her now, does she really like that it's a female avatar that she gets to play? Does that seem to get her more into it, or?
I think that I made the change before she really registered that there was a big difference there.
Oh, okay.
And so as a result, she thinks now that she's the hero of that story, and she is going to be that's what she's going to be for Halloween.
That's adorable.
It's not without problems. Now any cardboard tube she picks up is a sword.
Right.
So that's probably
its own challenge.
But that's probably a fair trade, right? Like, mm-hmm. I at the very least I should have seen that coming. But she has been interested in actually pursuing it, and she does want to come and sit down with me and play through whatever the next step in the story is and figure out what the next thing we have to find is. Mm-hmm. And it's been rewarding for me to see her identify, even if we're at a point in her life where she probably doesn't really understand the implications of all of it yet. And I should say that. She certainly doesn't understand the implications of all of it yet.
Yeah.
But we're at a point now where she can actually say that she identifies with herself being the hero. And that, at the very least, it's valuable to me. And I hope that that kind of thing, I hope that that idea takes root. Right? That she gets to be the protagonist in that story if she wants to be.
You know, and I have to say this, I think that she, you know, if, because my daughter kind of, she hit that point, she's almost five now, but she hit that point fairly recently, because we've been playing Ni No Kuni, and one of the things that she's done is she started to notice things like, Esther's in this game, but she's not wearing as many clothes as the boys are. Isn't she cold? Because they have on jackets and her belly's hanging out.
Yeah.
these kinds of things.
Women's armor is nonsense, right? Like,
there's no logic to it.
No, there's none. That's fantastic. I mean, as many of you know, the forearms? Basically, bikini forearms and the bottom half of your thighs. That's the only part of a woman that needs protection in a sword fight.
Yeah, exactly. That's all that'll get hit. Come on now.
Seriously.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I've been watching this because, you know, for those reasons, I mean, she doesn't want to be the female character in the game, you know, because she role plays these things, so mm-hmm. You know we've kind of made it kind of, and I'm also previously an elementary school teacher, right? So we've made it into this kind of whole language arts unit, so we play the game and we, you know, talk a lot about kind of the mythology that we see in the game, and we've been reading books and doing kind of like little art projects and like crafty projects, like we made capes and made a harp and all these other kinds of cool things that surround the game. But the things that she wanted to use for herself and her role playing have been the things that are associated with the male protagonist, because she doesn't want to be half dressed.
Seriously, that was, you wouldn't put up with that in any number of other formats. It's mm-hmm. just, and it's really a problem. If you want to raise somebody who's going to be an equal participant in all of this.
Yeah.
Because, Jesus, guys, come on. Mm-hmm. This is one of the things that I actually enjoyed most about the Mass Effect series mm-hmm. is at the Mass Effect. The Mass Effect series gives you the option of being of role playing as a male or female protagonist.
Yeah.
But the dialogue doesn't change. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If Commander Shepard walks onto the screen, people are afraid of Commander Shepard, not because that's a man or a woman under all the space armor there, but because that's a badass under that space mm-hmm. armor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And I'm hoping we can get to the point with more modern games where that kind of thing is just accepted as sort of the baseline of what we can accept as the baseline for how we treat people.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get there. I mean, we're not going to get there this year, and we're not going to get there next year, but we'll get there.
Well, that's definitely something that, you know, we talk all the time about, and is sort mm-hmm. of one of our goals for doing this is trying to make a space where people know that they're not the only one who looks at Lara Croft and they're like, really? Like, should she be wearing that and jumping around in trees or something like that, right? So those feelings you have, you know, they're normal and...
It's in many cases it's worse than that. There has been problems, I think, with for example, the Metroid series. Seamus Aran, one of the classic female video game players, game characters, I should say, horribly mistreated in the latest episode of the franchise.
Yeah,
just astoundingly condescending. How that character was handled by, I think it was Team Ninja in Other M. And right, this has been a historically a strong female character who, for the sake of, not even for the sake of the narrative, but for the sake of, I think, the developer's own amusement, was just horribly abused in an incredibly condescending storyline. Mm-hmm. One of the same thing was true of Lara Croft in the latest edition of her franchise, that the character itself went from being you know, somewhat underdressed, but nevertheless a strong female lead.
Yeah.
To being, you know, to playing the victim's role again.
Absolutely.
We just did a whole podcast on that very issue.
And Alex and I had a huge argument about it because I feel very much the same way about this latest iteration of Lara Croft, and a lot of people don't. And I'm like, I'm older. I was an adult when I played Lara Croft for the first time. So I have a very different perception of who Lara Croft was, you know, as an adult woman playing Tomb Raider versus this Lara Croft in this latest iteration of Tomb Raider. So, yeah, I I'm glad you said that.
Yes. I could just hear your smile all the way across town.
Validated her argument.
Well, so please understand, like, I was struggling to find the word. In fact, I don't even know if we have a word for that. I was trying to find what is the female equivalent of the word emasculated there. Yeah. Because if that had happened to a male lead, that's what you would call that. Yep. Right. Yes. You'd call it cutting their sack off.
Right.
Yep. But because the English language being the thing that it is, you know, which is a different problem we don't have time for in this podcast. there's not even a female word for that. No. Or a word for a gender equivalent word for that on the women's side. But it really is depowered, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, are you familiar with the term women in refrigerators?
No.
Okay, so this is really interesting. This is a term that comes from the comic book industry, mm-hmm. Or at least an analysis of the comic book industry. And the reason it's called women in refrigerators is because of a storyline involving the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, where he comes across his girlfriend, who has been essentially killed and stuffed into a refrigerator by some arch-villain in the series. And the rest of the story focuses on how he feels about that, right? Not about anything involving the female character who has just been killed or mutilated, but along the male character's reaction to that. And so this project, Women in Refrigerators, is just a catalog of all of the female characters in all the women in the comic book industry or in the female comic book characters who have been either killed or disempowered in order to elicit sympathy for the male lead standing next to them.
Oh, and that's really interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's not a short list.
No, I imagine that. I grew up reading comics, and yeah, I imagine that list is quite large.
Yeah, and when you step back and look at the list over the course of the decade or two that they've been putting this together, the end result of that is kind of appalling. And that was sort of the same way I felt about Metroid or the new Metroid series, and the same way I felt about Lara Croft, is that Lara Croft has been essentially abused in order to elicit sympathy from the male player.
Yeah.
But not for any reason having to do with the character themselves. And it's kind of shameful and kind of embarrassing, but it certainly tells you who the important gaze belongs to in that mm-hmm. relationship, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and that's kind of been the argument for me throughout. It's like their rationale was this is going to empower Lara Croft, and I'm like, no. What you don't understand is that, this theme of rape that runs throughout doesn't empower women in any way, shape, or form. Yes. You know, on top of the fact that she, she is this whining, whimpering idiot for the first half of the game. That just mm-hmm. makes makes me want to grab someone and shake them.
They had to do that because it was her coming of age story, right? That's what Ron Rosenberg or whoever they interviewed said.
Oh yeah. God, yeah, no, a dude writing a woman's coming of age story—that sounds like a great idea.
Through rape, right?
Yeah.
Right. That'll totally be representative of something of value.
You know, it makes me very curious, though, how you feel having, being quite aware of these things that are so, not horrible for women who play video games and kind of being subjected to that on their own, but having a daughter who's quite young, who's starting to get into it, like, do you worry what that will do for her as she starts to grow older and she actually does start to understand those things? Like, because you can't mod games for her for the rest of her life. I mean, you could, maybe, but...
Well, I don't intend to, right?
Right.
And this is the point where I'm hoping that these are sort of formative stages,
mm-hmm.
That I'm not here to protect her from the world. I'm here to establish her establish what her expectations of the world are and what she wants from the world,
mm-hmm.
And how she expects the world to treat her, which is hopefully with respect and a degree of deference, and for her to not accept less than that just because that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this with the media earlier with ads, but it turns out this is true in a lot of respects. the thing that I really hope that she understands, you know, and I have, I'm sure, 20 years of work ahead of me here, is that these things aren't carved in stone, and you don't have to accept them for the way they are.
Yeah.
And it's work. Like, it's a ton of work, and it's often thankless work. Because, I mean, certainly in the modification for the Wind Waker stuff that I did, I published that. And among the mail that I got for that were honest to God death threats.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, funny story. All of you guys are going, yeah, sure. It's like it's bog standard stuff.
Yeah.
If I tell this story to young men, they go, death threats? Really? No. No, you didn't get that. And any women I tell this story to are like, ah, yeah, death threats. Welcome to the internet, son.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's your, yeah, seriously, welcome to the internet. Here's your sign.
Yeah, here's your badge of honor.
Yeah, seriously.
You've been formally introduced.
Yeah. Did you get any rape threats, they say? No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not doing something right.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you can get that merit badge next week.
Yeah.
Right. But just the fact that, even though we're starting out from a position of relative, relative privilege, in viewing this stuff. And even though we're starting out with the ability to change this stuff and to make decisions about what we consume, that doesn't mean that there isn't, you know, that doesn't mean that there isn't a world out there that needs changing. And a lot of things out there that we either don't or can't, if we're moral actors, just accept. As you can imagine, this is kind of a heavy conversation to have with a 4-year-old.
Yes.
So at this point, leading by example is the only thing I can think of how to do.
And I think definitely one of the best ones. I mean, because, as the kind of more critically aware mother of a 4-year-old, that's kind of the only thing that I can hope to do is to get her to kind of, understand what is coming and what needs to be done through what I do. I mean, so that, it doesn't become one of those do as I say, not as I do moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would really like that reaction to be reflexive. Like I would like the revulsion there to be visceral. Right. Like it really doesn't need to be like this. Why are you even talking about women like this?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's the case. I mean, we'll get there. Who knows? I've got a kid. Who knows how they're going to turn out? Talk to me in 30 years, and I'll tell you how it kind of went.
Yeah. I'll tell you how much. I say that all the time. I'll tell you how much therapy I'm paying for once we get to that point.
Yeah, seriously. My grandmother used to say, "Well, you'll know how they turn out in 40 years, I guess." Okay. Well, I guess we're playing the long game now, but that just means you got to dig in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So here's a question: when you started this, did you have any idea how much of a big story this would become?
It was a little bit scary. It turns out that one of the I was informed after the fact,
mm-hmm,
that one of the big things that makes a really good news story is something that's easy to explain and that's easy to forward to your friends and that makes you kind of feel good. And so once I published it, I thought, this is kind of neat. I'll tell my friends about it. And I put it up on my weblog. And so a couple of people got a hold of it. And then a couple of those people forwarded it to, some major websites, apparently. And then the internet just took over from there, right? It's something that is, you can digest the entire thing in about 30 seconds. You can forward it to your friends in moments. And if you want to leave a horrible comment on my website, you can do that in another 2 minutes, sure. But I didn't realize that that is a key sort of metric of success in modern media, is how quick you can get in and out of a story. And because I was doing a thing that is kind of catchy and kind of new, and also very easy to sort of, even if you don't want to play through the whole game, you can understand what has happened here in no time, that it really just exploded. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize on some level that it was going to do that. I kind of hoped that the idea would catch, on. I mean, I've had that weblog for years, and I occasionally put odd things up, but I'm happy that this thing caught on the way it did. I didn't really expect it would, but mm-hmm. I'm okay with the fact that it did. A number of other people have since gone into, you know, classic video games. There was a fellow a couple of weeks ago who in, I think it was classic Donkey Kong, the old 8-bit thing, mm-hmm. you know, for the original Nintendo, who changed that up so that the princess, not Princess Peach, is it Princess? No, pardon me, Princess Peach, I think, is the Mario princess.
Yep.
That she is the one jumping around rescuing Mario.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, fantastic. And since then, there's a guy named Aaron Diaz who makes a webcomic called Dresden Kodak, of which I'm a longstanding fan, and you should really look it up and read the whole thing. But he has had a whole reimagining of the Zelda series for a new version of the franchise, where he's proposed a new version of that as well, where Princess Zelda is the hero of the story and has to rescue Link from whatever. And it's beautiful, and and I love his work. I've loved it forever.
Nice.
I don't really feel like when I'm thinking about these things quietly to myself, I think, you know, I kind of feel like I have started something.
It feels like a bit of a movement. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I mean, like the cases that you kind of have brought up, and then there's another woman who on the internet, I don't know her last name, she just goes by Kenna W, who's redone The Legend of Zelda and replaced Link with Zelda. Because she says she always felt like if it was called Legend of Zelda, Zelda should be the star,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah, I forgot about that one. I mentioned that. I've thought about that one as well. And yeah, it's really amazing. And I feel like it feels in general like this is part of a broader push, or at least a broader conversation we're having in the gaming community right now about the way women are treated in the industry and about the standards of behavior to which we hold ourselves in the gaming industry. And it feels like a sort of watershed moment that now we're all getting together and saying, or we're not all getting together and saying, because there's always going to be a cadre of regressive Neanderthals who are not interested in having this conversation.
Yeah.
But people getting together and saying that this is really not acceptable. One of the things that inspired me to make this change was Valve's Project Lil, for example, which is their push to make gender-neutral pronouns used throughout their video game. Throughout the Portal 2 was the most notable place that was deployed, I think, to make the game more accessible and more equitable on that front. And so I don't think I'm the first person to have this kind of idea, but man, it feels pretty good. I'll tell you.
Maybe what we needed was a grassroots movement.
Yeah.
maybe
to rally behind.
Yeah.
Well, it's still pretty inaccessible. It's still pretty inaccessible, and there's still not a lot of good documentation for how people can do that for themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm working on that.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about that right now. But I'm working on that. And you know, stay tuned, as they say. Yes. But I am interested in seeing more of this stuff in the future because there's no reason it needs to be like this. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of reasons it shouldn't. Jeez.
It almost feels like beating a dead horse over the head a couple more times. Cause it seems like something that we talk about a lot, but at the same time, it needs to continue to be talked about because there's nothing being changed about it quite yet.
You know, social change is slow.
Mm-hmm.
Slow and awful. There's a saying, at least in the sciences, that change doesn't come about when people realize that there's a better idea. Change comes about when you start teaching young kids the new idea, and the old people who held on to the old ideas eventually just get old and die. We've seen this problem with social change. Certainly social change in North America has followed that pattern. Where the acceptance of, you know, essentially, well, the acceptance of everything, black people not being property, women being able to vote, it often takes a generation to get rid of the old ideas. And some people still hold on to the old horrible old regressive ideas, but thankfully they are in an increasing minority and that stuff is going away all the time. You know, whether or not gay people are allowed to marry, we're going to see the back of that in 20 years, and the more conservative parts of the country are frightened of that. So there's an enormous backlash against these. There's an enormous backlash against the idea that maybe people are people, and that, you know, and not property, whether that's women or minorities or anything. And we'll get there, but it's going to take a long time, and it's going to take a ton of work.
So you mentioned that you have been thinking about, like, kind of the lack of women in the gaming industry and the treatment of women in these industries. And part of that, like you said, is it goes along with sort of cultivating these skills in the young people. So do you plan on teaching your daughter any programming things or any of those skills?
I'm trying to do a couple of things on that front. I have a suspicion that not being able to program and not being able, I think that, well, essentially programming and statistics, I think are going to be the two big illiteracies of the 21st century. Mm. And if you don't kind of understand, like, you don't have to be Shakespeare, but if you can't at least read, then you're going to be at a huge disadvantage as compared to people who can. And so I'm going to hopefully my daughter is going to be literate in those fields. I'm not going to insist that she become proficient in them. And, you know, the way she decides to live her life is going to be up to her. And, you know, if the way she decides to live her life and the things she decides to learn really are up to her, that'll be a victory in itself. But I do think I want her to be literate in these fields. Maybe because they've been important fields to me and because, you know, I built a whole career out of that stuff. But maybe because, you know, and maybe I'm flattering myself in thinking that the things that I do happen to be important. But I do think that you do have to understand that the way that computers work affects the culture around computers, and that the way computers work affect the culture around all of us as well is an important thing. So I'm hoping that those two ideas take root.
Yes, well said. I think especially those of us in the digital humanities and the work I think we're all doing just pretty much just banks on that idea of the inseparability of sort of the cultural from the technological.
Mm-hmm. Like it's. I think it's a bit of a truism that you can build some things with some tools. And so the decision of what tools you pick up is going to affect the things you can build and the change you can make in the world. And frankly, computers are basically everywhere and in everything now. So if you don't at least understand some fundamental part of that, that you are in a lot of ways illiterate and in a lot of ways blind. So, and I don't think you need to have a deep understanding of, say, you know, compiler design or, you know, integrated circuit design to really be literate in the field, but God, you need something. Like, you know, you need to be able to understand, if someone explains to you how traffic lights work, you've got to be able to speak to that in some kind of information, you know, or in some learned sense. Because otherwise you're just getting shuffled around by the traffic lights and you don't really know where you're going or why.
Definitely. That's a really good way to put it too. Cause even outside of, just the video, you know, game industry or anything like that, I currently work at a bank right now and I've become their like technology guru because I'm the only person who has any understanding of computers at all. And to me, it's so flabbergasting that they have no idea how these things kind of work. But, it's also painfully apparent that it is becoming so much more of an important thing. And there are people who are so outside of it. And if anything, it's they're lacking of being a part of that conversation. And it's becoming so much more important technology surrounds everything we do now.
Mm-hmm. And it's really important as a result that it not be allowed to become a priesthood, essentially.
Yes.
That you know, there's this one cadre of people. Because at this rate, that cadre of people are probably going to be white male living in Silicon Valley and really ridiculously rich. And it turns out that may not be representative of the broad swath of people who are affected by their decisions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who saw that coming, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a real problem. And the fact that, I mean, what you were describing there is how my career started as well.
Really?
Very much so. I started my career as a systems administrator by just being the guy who could fix the printer. So pretty soon I was the guy fixing the printers, and then I could, you know, and then I could make the computers talk to the server. So pretty soon I was the guy making the computers talk to the server, and that was okay for a while until somebody had a problem with the server, and then I got sent to fix that. And it all sort of snowballed from there. But it was not, I was fortunate in all of that, that because I had grown up in a family where we had, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, like an Apple IIc starting up, I never thought of that as being sort of magic or voodoo. I thought it was a problem that needed to be understood and solved. Mm-hmm. And I could approach it like that. And an awful lot of people to this day still don't see computers in that light.
No.
Right? It's a box with a wizard in it.
It's a scary box. If you do something wrong, it's going to explode in your face. That's what I've come to find.
Don't touch it or change anything. I understand how this works, but that's all.
Don't explore any other options that you have because it won't work.
Right. And that fear of change is something that I'm hoping to avoid. I'm hoping to avoid it myself when I get old. I can already kind of feel that creeping in. And it's the number of people who are on my lawn, that number grows every day. It's appalling. but that fear of change is, especially when you're confronted with technology, which is moving really, really quick, can be paralyzing. And it's, I think, important that the people who are left in charge of those changes are not one class of people. Whatever that means, whether it means they're all sort of, you know, affluent Silicon Valley VC or entrepreneurs or anything else. This has gotten to be a pretty big discussion, hasn't it? We strayed a little bit from video games.
It's still applicable.
The gist of it is that this stuff needs to be changeable. Mm-hmm. It needs, I think, to be accessible and changeable. And that's true at the level of the culture as much as it is at the level of the technology.
Well, kind of a good question, I think, to bring it back and start wrapping up, because we don't want to keep you too terribly long. You mentioned earlier that you were working on a game, a new perhaps. And what game are you working on right now in terms of anything you might be modding?
So the next big project that I'm considering modifying is another, actually, it's another Zelda game, and it's called Majora's Mask,
mm-hmm.
Which is a game that is dear to my heart, because in Majora's Mask, the interesting thing about that is that you're not really the hero of the story, because the story doesn't really have a hero.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game that takes the Zelda idea and turns it on its head, in that instead of having you be the hero and everything in that world revolving around you, that it presents you as being the only person in this environment who can make the changes, or the only person in this environment who can do anything. But it never says that you're the most important thing there. And the whole world basically ignores you, right? So you have this adventure that's basically an adventure of conscience,
mm-hmm.
rather than an adventure of epic heroism, where you're presented with these problems by people who have, and they're often not epic problems either. They're just problems by characters in the story, in the game, who have bad timing or bad communication and bad luck. And you've got to figure out how to help them, not because you're the hero of this story, but because you're the only person there who can. And so I have big dreams about whether or not that sort of lesson will take as well.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, for my kid, that sometimes you need to just step up, not because it's all about you, but because you're the only person who can help. And we'll see how it goes. Let's go. You know, again, I'll talk to you in a couple of years and tell you how well that worked out. But I'm interested in it because it's a fascinating, it's a really fascinating game, and it takes a lot of the tropes of the series and turns them on their head in a way that I find very, very dark and very sort of mind expanding if you're willing to spend some time thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a great one. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. But when you talk about not having time, like, you probably figured out by now that I will talk about this forever if you let me.
You know, you were in good company then, because so were we.
We get a little bit long-winded sometimes.
Fantastic.
That's funny.
That's why we try to be very kind of considerate of other people, because once you get us started, it's hard to get us to shut up.
We should sit down sometime. Sometime when we're all in the same city, we'll just sit down and start rolling on this.
We would never leave.
Oh, fantastic. So what else can I tell you tonight?
I'm jumping back for a second. Ladies, we had a couple of other questions that we've danced around, but anybody want to ask anything in particular?
Well, kind of even just touching on what we were just talking about, it made me think even like, so when you are playing these games with your daughter, you are hoping that she's getting kind of real world consequences and morals. And I mean, a lot of people, I think parents that are maybe ignorant to what video games actually do have the potential to, and focus more so on the violence aspect of everything, don't realize that there are benefits to playing games or reading books, even kind of immersing yourself in a world and learning things from them. So for you, you do see that with your daughter, that she's getting these kind of real world experiences from them.
Well, we've done very little bit of those. We've done very little bit of the sort of moral choice stuff. The more, you know, the bigger, more complicated games can be a little bit frightening. We mm-hmm. stuck to the simpler stuff. Mostly what I'm looking for now is agency, right? I want, and let me tell you from personal experience that telling your young daughter that she has a choice in what she's going to do is not without consequences. as a parent, because she leaves that, she leaves these games with the lesson that she has choices in whatever she wants to do. And then we have to have other conversations, like maybe it is bath time and you don't get to decide that tonight.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of thing. But the other thing that is interesting about it is the number of ways that we can have a kind of fun or lighthearted fun in big open world games mm-hmm. together. One of the things that surprises a lot of people when I tell them this is that Maya and I actually spend a lot of time playing Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, right. Assassin's Creed 2. Fantastic game. Because it's this great big open world game. She doesn't see any of the storyline. She doesn't see any of the, you know, the violence and the stabbing and sword fighting and so on. But there's a horse in it. So as far as she's concerned, this is a game where we can spend, we can spend 40 minutes just wandering around this wonderful old city and then riding a horse in the countryside for a while. Yeah. And she thinks it's great. You know, Dad, I want to get off the horse. I want to get that other horse over there. All right, let's go ride that other horse.
Yep.
Sounds good.
That's us with dragon riding in Ni No Kuni. Yeah,
it's a good time, right? Dad, I want to go climb that building now and then jump in the river. Okay, let's go do that. And so we can spend a couple of hours in what would otherwise be an absolutely unsuitable game for kids, having a bunch of light, harmless, sort of make your own fun, looking around at things.
Yeah.
And it's a good time. So I think that it's a little early for the moral choice stuff. We'll get there. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of classic games here that I'm hoping she'll get to eventually. Who knows if she will. Her tastes and hobbies may take her in other directions. But just the fact that you can take these things and spend a lot of time making your own fun and, frankly, just sitting with your kid instead of leaving them in front of a TV and playing with them. I don't think that I'm going to regret doing that.
Definitely not.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you, I kind of had that conversation with a parent at my daughter's school yesterday, because she started talking about, you know, these characters and things that she had done, and they were kind of looking like, what the heck is she talking about? I said, well, it's a video game that she and I play together. And the woman looked at me and she goes, oh, we don't play video games. And I said, yeah, but you just sat there and said, when you go home and make dinner, you sit your kid in front of the TV and she watches SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you're going to look at me cockeyed because I just said
that's right.
I play games with my kid. I'm interacting with mine.
Yeah, seriously. Like SpongeBob SquarePants is not a source of moral authority.
In it, no way, shape, or form. And I will tell you, oh, no, we don't watch SpongeBob because we don't even allow SpongeBob toys in the house. I am so much not a fan of SpongeBob SquarePants.
I don't know. We try and avoid things. One of the things that I've tried to convince my daughter of, now that she's sort of growing up, is, you know, she occasionally has moods where she starts, well, fussing and crying and or upset about some things. And I will remind her that, and this oddly enough has come up when we were watching, when we were reading Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, which is a bullshit story for a young girl, I should tell you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me, Dad, why do you not like this story? And it's the same story, Maya, it's the same story that I tell you when I'm asking you to be calm and not to fuss and cry, right? Is, pardon me here, just for a second. So, Maya, babies don't get to choose things. Right. This is the reason that I'm asking you to stay calm, is so that you can stay calm and make choices. Right. And you notice that little babies don't get to make those choices. They don't get to decide what they eat, or they don't get to decide where they go. And we can't ask them questions and talk about that. I said, but if you look carefully at the Snow White story, you'll see that Snow White doesn't get to make a lot of choices either. Right, she's supposed to be the hero of this story, but if you look very closely, the story treats her like a little baby the whole time. And she sort of looked at me like, Dad, you're being weird. But, you know, since then, she hasn't asked me to read Snow White since. So, you know, who knows? Maybe that lesson will take.
Yeah.
But again, it comes back to the idea that I really, really want her to believe that she has agency in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the only lesson that I'm hoping she takes out of it, if nothing else. If nothing else, that's going to be a win. I'm sure that I'm cultivating a teenager here that's going to have a magnificent attitude problem. It's going to be great.
Okay, Mike, let me tell you something. Mine has had that kind of attitude since she was very young, and I decided to cultivate it because what I've always told myself is, while these are the characteristics that make a phenomenal woman, they're going to make her teen years a living hell for me.
Oh, fantastic. Gosh, that's great news. Thanks. That's what I'm expecting here, right? Is I don't know how you raise a strong-willed adult without getting through being a strong-willed teenager.
Yeah.
And if that's the price we got to pay for this, then fine. I'm in.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Well, you know, we'll see how it works.
we may be commiserating in 20 years or so. They're both about four. So in about 10 years or so, we may be commiserating.
Yeah, right. Call me back in a decade. We'll go drinking.
We'll
go drinking and we can tell each other war stories.
Oh, wow.
It'll be a good time. It's exciting. And it's really kind of terrifying to watch, to be blunt, having a little girl is a real eye opener for these things. Cause you suddenly start looking around thinking this is nonsense and this needs to change. And, you realize that you've got a ton of work to do, not just being a parent, but being an agent in the world. And it's a little bit scary, but God, we got to get it done.
Yeah.
So is there anything else I can tell you guys tonight? Oh, it's night. We've been on this for an hour already.
Yeah, we have been. Well, I mean, I think that we've pretty much covered all the questions that we had. I mean, if there's anything else that you want to tell us, feel free to. Because we're really looking forward to what comes next from Mike Hoy, I tell you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very kind to say so. You're very kind to say so. I'm sure you've heard this before, but you guys are doing really important work. And I'm looking forward to seeing what comes from your work as well. Aside from that, I can't think of anything else that I want to add to this. Do you guys have any other questions or anything you've been holding back?
Well, I do have one more question. Will you come back after you finish your next game so we can talk about that?
I would love to.
Yes.
Awesome. You being sneaky, Alex.
I know, right?
It's recorded. You can't back out.
That was subtle.
Yeah. Okay. Subtleties my strong are what suit. We are best.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No, that's true.
All right, listen, it's been great fun talking to you guys. Thank
it
you.
It was great
for
fun talking
yes,
to you.
Thank
Thanks
you
so much,
much
for your time, Mike. So that was our interview with Mike Hoy. We hope that you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. And so what we'll do is we'll wrap up with our usual deals for broke-ass gamers for this week. There's some things that are on pretty good sale right now. You can always get a wonderful copy of Dragon Age Origins at Steam, the Ultimate Edition for $7.49. If you haven't played Dragon Age, you really need to play Dragon Age. It's kind of a wild ride, right? To think about a lot of issues of both race and gender as well. Definitely one not to be missed. The kind of indie sweetheart that lived only on PSN for a really long time. Popo and Yo. If you don't know this game, it's a pretty great game about a little boy who has a monster friend that runs around with him. But his monster friend has a bad habit of eating poisonous frogs that make him like go crazy. But interestingly enough, what this story is actually about is a boy's relationship with his abusive father. Right. Hmm. It's on sale right now on Steam, because it finally got ported over to Steam, this month. So for $13.49, you can definitely pick up a copy of that. I have not played that game in its entirety yet, but I will tell you, it's definitely something you want to check out. Yeah. And on Amazon, there's not a whole lot because Amazon's running their crazy gold box deals. So you can get some things pretty cheap right now. But nothing really. You can get like Dishonored for $30 if you haven't played Dishonored yet. Definitely not one to miss.
Definitely won't play Dishonored.
Me too.
You guys haven't, either of you have played that?
Well, I started it. You played it.
Oh, okay. You can get Disney Epic Mickey for $32.99, which, in my opinion, is $30.
It's also $9.99, I think, on GameFly. So,
oh, the first one or the second one?
Epic Mickey 2. Yeah.
Oh, see, grab it there.
Oh, it's not worth it. No.
That's why I said it.
$30
much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My daughter likes the characters, but the gameplay is so bad that she won't play it. She just wants me to play it so she can watch it.
Yeah, it's very terrible.
But it's cute.
Sure.
Somebody, if you could just watch somebody.
Lots of things are cute.
Yeah. Scorpions are cute. No, I'm joking.
No, they aren't.
No, they're not. I said I'm
terrifying.
Kidding. They're cute in a terrifying way.
Anywho. Yeah.
Not a whole lot of stuff that's on, not great stuff. Well, I won't say not great stuff that's on super sale. Hey, there's, of course, the 30 games for 30 days for 30 cents for the Nintendo Wii U and the eShop. So that's always one
sure,
to pick
so
up.
Hit that.
Play all the classics for 30 cents a piece. Indeed. There you go.
Indeed.
That's what you do this week.
That
So that's it for us for episode 54. That's our interview with Mike Hoy. We look forward to seeing you next time around. Remember, you can always contact us. Send us email at nymgamer@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at nymgamer. You can like us on Facebook and get all of our wonderful posts, right? So you'll know when the blog's been updated as well as when new episodes come. And it's all right there on Facebook because, as we know, everybody's on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, just about.
Yeah.
My mom isn't.
Oh,
good.
See?
Good.
Even my mom is, unfortunately.
Yeah, I told her she can't have one.
I'm glad my mom is. But that's coming up in the Mother's Day episode, so we'll get to that.
There's going to be a special Mother's Day episode. So we have all those kind of great ways to contact us. And of course, our blog is nymgamer.com, where, you know, you get our regular posts that are pithy and funny and sometimes sad. Yeah. Lots of great things to think about. Definitely check it out. And you can send us email us questions, comments, rage against the machine. Send us audio mail / voicemail or video mail. We take any kind of mail you got. And we'd be happy to answer your questions on the show, right?
Yep.
And I think that's about it. Yay. So until next time. Stay warm, stay dry, and as always, game on.
Game on.